Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Joining me in just a moment will be Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, and we're going to dive in to the topic of whether or not video games are good or bad, how do they impact everything from policing, suicide, and aggression among boys. He's the author of a book titled Assassination Generation, and in that book, he dives into the psychology and the crisis in the culture of why the increase in violence, especially among young people. We'll come up on that in just a moment. We're going to discuss today, as I've been walking through every day, St. Joseph as that theme. I'm making my consecration again to St. Joseph, that reconsecration. And maybe you are. Maybe you've already consecrated yourself to St. Joseph, or in the year of St. Joseph, you really grew in your devotion and your faith, and you attribute that to St. Joseph's intercession. Well, why not go deeper? We'll be doing that every day here on Trending. We're going to discuss the controversy surrounding Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and a case being omitted from the Judicial Committee's a whole list of cases that were given to them by the White House. In this case included a grisly child pornography sentencing that Judge Jackson ruled rather unconventionally on. So I'll share with you a little bit about that. Also, the claim was made this week by a teacher in Texas that 20 out of 32 of her students, fourth grade students, identify as LGBTQ. I'm blowing the whistle. I don't believe this, but I'll share with you what happened, what's happening in Texas on the LGBTQ front, and why we need to kind of keep our ears and eyes peeled when we hear stories like this, because they're trying to influence us to take a position. But joining me now, I want to dive into a very important topic, and that is, it has to do with our culture today surrounding everything from video games, suicide, school shootings, you name it. Join me now is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He is a former buck surgeon to a paratrooper, an army ranger, infantry commander, and West Point law enforcement trainer. Now he's a top law enforcement trainer in the nation and has countless books, everything from On Combat, The Psychology of Killing, and his book Assassination Generation, which we're diving into some of the themes today. Lieutenant Colonel, in your work, you've talked about how you've been plagued by this question of why is it so difficult when training your soldiers to help them in understanding the necessity to kill and getting over that very natural and good human safety that naturally discourages killing. Yet, as a culture, we've seen this massive increase in violence, especially over the last couple of years. I know in your studies and diving into the psychology here, you've really drilled down on this wave of violence in society, and you've even seen it impact your own family some years ago when your youngest son was in middle school. How about you start with sharing with us a little bit about that story when your son was in middle school and the research that you have discovered of why this increase in violence is occurring?
You bet, Timory. And, you know, I was called to the White House as part of President Trump's roundtable on violent video games, and kind of confronted the video game industry there. And I was invited again to brief Vice President Pence, and very gracious, impressive guys. But this whole business really began from my book on killing. Half Man Copy sold well worldwide. Marine Corps Commandants Required Reading. And about this resistance to killing and how the military has found out that using simulators and, you know, we can overcome it. We can talk about that in a minute, but it really cuts to the heart of the matter. You talked about my hometown of Jonesboro, Arkansas, March 1998. I'd retired from the Army and was traveling and training law enforcement. Now, for 25 years, I've been doing it. Trained cops in all 50 states, every federal agency. And early on, I got a call from my aunt in Florida. She said, "Dear Lord, is that Joe School that talks about? What's my aunt in Florida know about my son's school in Jonesboro, Arkansas?" She said, "Turn on the news." And there was on every station. Mass murder in the middle school in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Unknown dead. Fleets of ambulances being sent to my son's schools. So, you know, maybe we can wrap up on that story kind of at the end of when we talk here. But it really became deeply and profoundly personal. And school shootings in the last school year had actually doubled from the previous year. They've been high, and this last year they've just come unglued. The federal data there is really overwhelming, and that information is not getting out. And you really made a vital point about how violence has exploded. The highest annual increase in homicides we've ever seen was 12% one year in the 1960s. And then in 2020, there was a 30% annual increase in homicides. It's unprecedented explosion. And when we allow for medical technology, you know, the preventing murders by saving lives, it's actually much worse. The wheels have come off the bus. Things are coming unglued. A lot of factors in the equation. The idea that the cops are the bad guys and criminals are good guys. This is fed by the video games. This is the video game mantra that the criminals are the good guys. Grand Theft Auto V is best-selling video game in history the time it came out. And it really is a criminal murder simulator, a mass murder simulator. The year that game came out, it made more money than the entire global music industry. This industry has vast amounts of money. And so we need to understand that their goal is to design a video game that's impossible to turn off. You know, us old timers, we all remember Tetris. You know, think Tetris on steroids with crack. And each generation of video games with vast amounts of money are being invested to make these things addictive and really impossible to turn off. Adults are wearing diapers when they wear them, wearing diapers when they play the games because you can't stop. Adults are playing the games until they die. And the industry, one of the dynamics that's a spinoff on all of this is terribly important, is the sleep deprivation. You know, sleep deprivation is a critical factor in suicide. I presented the data at a major Department of Defense conference. A sleep-deprived soldier can be up to 5 times more likely to take their life. The best meta study we have on suicide tells us not only is suicide a major factor, not only is sleep deprivation a major factor in suicide, it's the most remediable factor. It's the one we could do something about it. A major killer of our kids exploded worldwide, sleep deprivation, and it's a major factor in traffic deaths. So 2 major killers of our kids, sleep deprivation, and just do an online search on global epidemic of sleep deprivation, and look how these and the first and foremost of these addicted video games. One study says 15% of all divorces in America, video games are the primary cause.
So wow, among adults.
They're intensely immersive. And you completely lose track of time. And their goal is to steal your time. They don't care that you're sleep deprived. They don't care that they're feeding addictive, violent models to you. The combination of sleep deprivation, impaired judgment, and the violent imagery being fed to our children, it just gets worse and worse year after year. The violence in our schools gets worse and worse. Tragic, tragic times are upon us. And the scary part is most people don't even know. So the goal is, and I really kind of the end thing to do is go to screenstrong.com to all your listeners, S-C-R-E-E-N, Screen Strong, S-T-R-O-N-G.com. And a lovely, lovely lady who takes you, although she comes from us, just like you and I, a faith-based perspective, but she's Melanie Hemp, and she is taking it from a medical addictive perspective.
Yes, we've had her here on Trending. By your recommendation, she's now a regular guest. We'll include a link to some of her comments on video games as well, because please explain how she's a great resource for parents who are trying to regulate video games and find the balance of how to implement them.
Yes. So to understand then how desperately bad the situation has become, and this whole idea of defund the police, it is just, you know, a conspiracy theory. 99 out of 100 senators voted to reject it. The president rejected in his State of the Union address. Every politician should be able to muster the courage to stand up and say that defund the police is insane. It's harmful. But where did they get this crazy idea that the cops are the bad guys and the criminals are the good mm-hmm. guys? And if we just got rid of the cops, it would all get better. And that really is this dominant theme of lawlessness and violence being fed to our children in the video games. They immerse these in things. It becomes their world. It's a twisted, topsy-turvy, bizarre world in which evil is good and good is evil. And of course, the Bible says, woe unto you when you say good is evil and evil is good. And that's what we're dealing with, this industry. And this whole dynamic of immersing yourself in this twisted world where the cops are the bad guys and the criminals are the good guys, and actually believing that and carrying that out in your politics in the real world, that cops are evil, and then this whole theme being carried out in the news and the misrepresentation. And of course, you are battling so very hard against this tragedy of abortion and the millions of innocent lives being slaughtered in our land. Well, this whole video game media violence dynamic just feeds that imagery of selfishness, yes. This imagery that any life that gets in your way is to be removed, and not just abortion, but now infanticide.
Right. And culture of death. And we see it from, yes. I mean, physician-assisted yes. suicide, euthanasia. Yeah. We're discarding the elderly. Yes. We're discarding the disabled. Yes. We're discarding anyone who we perceive might have any sort of genetic mutation or chromosomal damage.
Where does this come from? Yeah. This idea that our well-being is, you know, we can murder children. We can slaughter the innocent. We can kill cops. We can declare the criminals the good guys. Where does this come from? And this is this tragic world that the children immerse themselves in. And it is the most sickest and most perverted possible conspiracy theory that the criminals are the good guys and the cops are the bad guys.
But right, you so let's immerse talk yourself a little
in
bit.
This world of violence. Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that immersion. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He's a top law enforcement trainer in the nation today. He's written a number of books diving into the psychology of killing on combat, as well as understanding what's happening with this assassination generation, this high crime rate in the culture. You're pointing to video games, Lieutenant Colonel, and those video games, you mentioned this immersive world that young people are experiencing. Can you draw the connection between that experience of being immersed in video games, and some people might say, oh, well, it's only a couple hours a day or however many hours a day, and how that transfers into real life, and make that connection to violence for those who have maybe never heard this before?
Yes. And remember now, this is the new factor in the equation. Every single one. I really recommend a book called Mass Killers by Mark Roach, the Secret Service agent, R-O-C-H-E. And he talks about every one of these mass killers have watched some movie 50 times. They've immersed themselves in this the sickest part of the sickest culture the world's ever seen. But I outline in my book On Killing, which is currently Amazon's number one bestseller in military history, the Kindle edition. I outline how in World War II, we found out that most of the troops wouldn't pull the trigger. And we knew it. We transformed our training. In World War II, we trained soldiers to shoot bullseye targets. We have no known cases any bullseyes ever attacking our troops. If you've been in the U.S. Armed Forces since the Korean War, you never once shot a bullseye. A man-shaped silhouette pops in field view. You hit the target drop. Stimulus response. Like a pilot in a flight simulator, like a kid in a fire drill. Modern military and law enforcement training with great safeguards of discipline, with great foundation of law and order built into it, makes killing a conditioned response. And the video games do the same thing to children without the safeguard of discipline. Now, a lot of people sit out there and say, well, I played those games. I'm not a killer. Well, when I was a kid, I never buckled my seatbelt. Every single kid I know, none of us buckled our seatbelt. We're all just fine. Now, you know, the odds of your kid dying because his seatbelt unbuckled is very small. But all you got to do as a cop is see one kid splashed over the asphalt to become a believer in seatbelts. It is a direct cause and effect relationship. When we immerse our children in this world of operantly conditioning them, classically and socially conditioning them, and the fight or flight hormones, when they play these video games, the fight or flight hormones flood through their brains. In our book, Assassination Generation, we show the brain scan studies at Indiana University. Catastrophic shutdown of left brain processing to the fight or flight hormones are flooding through their body. And it is an addictive dynamic. And they become enraged when their games are taken away from them. We keep seeing multiple cases where parents take the games away and the kids become hyper-violent, even murderous. This dynamic, while I played those games when I was a kid, we did a lot of dumb things when we were kids. We can do a better job with this next generation. And those who have been in the military know what I'm talking about. When we made killing a conditional response with pop-up targets and realistic simulators with the safeguard of discipline being done to adults, when we realize the same thing is being done to our children, it should enrage us. And it just gets worse every year. It's not about the guns, it's not about the cops. The media is desperately trying to point the finger somewhere else.
And it's not an educated pointing. And I think that's what's so providential and important about your book, Assassination Generation. You're making the psychological connection between video games and this onslaught of violence and killing. I'd like to come back discussing what you mentioned with that, a killing conditioned response that is built in with playing video games, and then also connect it with this dehumanization when it comes to, it's not natural to desire to kill someone. There's an inhibition that has to be overcome in order to do that, and video games is jumping past that inhibition. So joining me now is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. We're going to come back diving into whether or not video games are good or bad and how they have impacted policing and suicide and aggression as we've been discussing today on Trending. Find his book, Assassination Generation. You can find it online for sale. We're also going to include a link in the podcast notes and we'll post it now on social media. We'll be right back. If you have a question, give us a call or comment with your question on Instagram now.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Why the secrecy? Why did the White House hide a case that was given to the Judiciary Committee surrounding potentially our next Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson? It had to do with child pornography. We're talking about little kids, elementary school, 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds. Why did that happen? We're going to talk about that a little later here on the show. And we're also going to talk about whether or not it's true. A school teacher in Texas is claiming that 20 out of 32 of her fourth graders in her class have come out to her as identifying as some form of LGBTQ. Do you buy it? Do you think it's real? Not? Well, I'll tell you the truth on this story and what's happening. So stay with me. Joining me now is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He is a former Buck Sergeant, a paratrooper, an Army Ranger, infantry commander, and West Point law enforcement trainer. He's now the top law enforcement trainer in the nation and has written countless books on the psychology of killing, combat. And now what we're seeing is what's happening in our culture with what he refers to as the assassination generation, this onslaught of violence that has only gotten worse in the last number of years. He's been showing how in his research, when he was begging this question 30 years ago, why has there been this increase in research or increase in killing, in aggression, in suicidality, that the link that no one's talking about. And it's an answer that for many people may be a little startling. It may even upset you because maybe you say, well, I'm not that way. Why are you pointing the finger at something I like to do? The thing he is explaining is a connection between video games and this onslaught in killing. He's talked about how when we play video games, it immerses us in a world that desensitizes us to our inhibition to kill, and it conditions a killing response. Can you explain the psychology of how video games do that and how that's the exact opposite of how you're trying to help train the very soldiers that you work with to be able to know when is the right time to kill when there's not a desire naturally to do so? There's an inhibition that naturally occurs.
Timory, you really nailed it there in so many ways. And I think what I try to come at this to get people to really understand is the hard thing to explain is that 99.9% of our citizens will go a lifetime, never kill anybody or even attempt to. Divorce, infidelity, layoff, track, traffic accidents in a lifetime of provocation, less than 1 in 1,000 citizens will even seriously attempt to take a human life. Explain that. Inside most human beings, there's this powerful resistance, a God-given, socially driven, but it can be undone. And it is an act of evil to do it indiscriminately to children. There's so many things adults can do, you know, alcohol and beauty of sex within a marital context. And there's so many good things adults can do, but they're evil if inflicted upon children. And you got to realize these games that you might enjoy, as long as they don't get in the way of your sleep and they get in the way of your marriage or get in the way of your job, as an adult, it's not that big a deal. But when you inflict it upon children, it's something else. And one of the key things to focus on is the rating system. Now, Congress told the video game industry, you do a rating system or we'll do it for you. So this is an evil, absolutely creative, ingenious industry allowed to do their own rating system. So first they have A, 18 and above, adults only. And there's never been an A-rated game that I know of for violence. Some of the gambling games, and another thing adults can do but kids can't, is gambling. But then they've got M, 17 and above. So that great developmental leap between age 17 and 18. You know, and M means mature. Every kid thinks it's mature. I'm mature. You told me I'm mature. You're very immature. I'm disappointed in you. It's just a powerful word for children. They took the most evil games. They put a smoke screen out front. Oh, it's not A. It must be okay. And then they called it mature. And then they take the next level down is T, 13 and above only. They want you to think parental guidance suggested, but it's not. It's a hard line. So one of the most popular games out there is Fortnite. The very young children are playing this online. It's T, 13 or above, yes, only. You tell them that people made the game say you shouldn't play it till 13, but they fought all the way to the Supreme Court to overturn the California law regulating children's access to these games. So when we look at the ratings, that's part of it. But even the nonviolent ones are tremendously addictive. And they make you lose track of time. I love the Civilization series of games. They're very immersive and deep games. And I have to apply some real self-discipline to make sure it doesn't get away of my sleep or my job or my marriage. As children, these things, even though they're not violent, they are so sleep-depriving and so immersive. But then you've got a time a year or two later when you say, you know, if you built models, if you had a hobby, you would have products you can look at. You can have things you know, you hang from the ceiling or hang from the wall. You could have things that you looked at and said, I built this. I made this. I could put my hands on this. When you look at years and years of video games, you look back and it's hollow. It's empty. There's nothing real that you ever did.
It's not tangible.
And you combine it with the sleep deprivation. It is a key factor in suicides. It is so important that we protect our children and let them have a childhood. They don't need cell phones until they're very mature. They don't need video games until they're adults. You know, let them have a childhood. And these things are so addictive that they're great babysitters. Oh, he loves a game. He sits down and watches the game. You know, I've got my three-year-old on the cell phone. Look, he does it all day long. He's not doing a three-year-old ought to be doing.
Right. Or some people will say, well, at least they're at home. They're not out getting in trouble, but they don't realize the psychology of what's happening and the long-term impact that could pose.
And, you know, there's another angle on that. Oh, at least they're at home. We're getting so much research on how important it is to be outside, to be in the park, in the wilderness, in the woods. I'm a huge science geek. Another major study on the link between sleep deprivation and obesity, sleep deprivation and opiate epidemic, sleep deprivation on suicide. The sleep deprivation is just woven in with everything. But the opposite of that is getting outside during the day in the sunlight and being in the park raised happiness to the equivalent of Thanksgiving or Christmas. Just spending time in the park created a level of happiness as measured by online dynamics. And, you know, the studies that we see the irony of scanning tweets and emails to judge people's happiness. But when they're in the park and they report their happiness, when we scan for words, we can measure millions of people's input. And we can see that nothing makes them as happy as being outside and being in the park. It's as happy as they get at Christmas. It's amazing what's happening. So
that's
your
incredible.
Children, at least they're inside. Well, that's not necessarily such a good thing anyway. You know, take them out to the park, take them out to the backyard, you know, dig a little sandbox back there and have fun in it, to build a tree fort, go out and have a life, put them together with other children who also are in, you know, in your church, in your church group, think about Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and church affiliated organizations we can put the children with that gives them a life. And at least they're inside. They need to be outside. They need to have a life. They need to have a childhood, not spent on the cell phone, not spent playing these addictive video games. And then, of course, as we said, this dynamic to turn off the resistance to killing, to make it a conditioned reflex. And it also makes suicide a conditioned reflex. Many of the games, you know, you lose points if they kill you, so you kill yourself. And then in the game, you're able to restart. They don't realize that in real life, there is no restart. There's a shutdown of left brain processing. The fight or flight hormones are flooding through their brain. And when you're in desperate battle for your life, what happens tomorrow, where your next meal comes from, is not even on your radar screen. So predictive, rational, logical processing in the brain gets shut down. And that left side, from L for logic, you know, the left side of the brain, is shut down as you're in a desperate fight for life and death. But these fight or flight hormones will flood out of the body if you detox for about 2 days. You know, church camps nationwide tell me nothing spiritual happens in this camp for the first 2 days. On the third day is like somebody threw a switch. The fight or flight hormones have finally flushed out of their body for Lord knows how long. How long have they gone in this constant innervated state, playing the games, watching
state of
violent
stress.
Shows?
Plate of stress and fight or flight hormone, your child is under extreme duress, and people don't realize this, as the influence from video games and ongoing digital media use is that's what these things do to a developing mind.
And how many people even knew that 2020 homicides exploded? And this is just mostly America and Canada. It's not the pandemic. It's a product of what's happening. The 2020 was 3 times worse annual increase in homicides, anything we've ever seen. And the comparison really breaks down because the comparison between homicides in the 60s and today, medical technology is holding down the homicide rate. It's horrendous. And all around us, things are coming unglued. And the evil industry that's responsible for that points a finger. It's all those people of religion saying we can't have an abortion. You know, it's all the cops that are putting good people in jail. You know, they've got to point the finger somewhere else. They will never point the finger back at themselves. And it really comes back to the, right up until the 1960s, Hollywood operated by a code. And the code said, we know the stories we tell have an impact on our society. We know we have a responsibility to tell stories that have a positive impact. A lot of the code could be said in 3 words, crime doesn't pay. Criminals will not be depicted in a positive manner. Law enforcement will not be depicted in a negative manner. And then in the early 1960s, the code was thrown away. They said, we do not have any responsibility for what our stories have on our society. The commercials are worth millions of dollars because they influence people's behavior. The years and years of garbage between the commercials fed to our children, years and years on these sick murder simulators, have no impact on our children. And this refusal to accept responsibility for what they're doing is really at the heart of the whole matter. And if you allow for medical technology, violence has gone up virtually every single year per capita, never even gone back down again since the 1960s. But, you know, people say, well, look how much better it is than the 60s. That's like saying, well, you know, you make $25 an hour, Your grandpa made 25 cents an hour. Look how good you've got it. Well, we all know the lie there of a little thing called inflation. But when they compare murders between now and the 60s, we should spot the lie that medical technology is preventing 3 out of 4 murders. That the actions that would have killed people in the 60s, today we save their lives by slapping on a tourniquet, by the ambulance that arrives with state-of-the-art technology, by cell phones that call that help right away. So just understand how desperately bad it is, and we need to turn back to the Lord. You know, my book on spiritual combat is really the culmination of my lifetime of work. And In the end, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. We're against forces of evil that are being fed to our children through these games and through these movies and these TV shows that have thrown away any sense of responsibility to our culture. And so, you know, what do? Well, I'll start by listening to beautiful Catholic radio and wonderful people like my good friend Timmery, who's pointing us towards paths of virtuous and honorable for our children, and is warning you against what's happening to your children with these cell phones.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman today on Trending with Timmery. You can find his book, Assassination Generation. Others online will include a link to Assassination Generation on our podcast notes as well as on social media now. He's talking about how faith, virtue, self-control help to implement and protect our kids. That video games really are a no-go for teenagers. Let them play them as adults, great, but protect them and preserve them from this assassination generation we're in. I'll be right back here on Trending. Are you tired of educational options that are a one-size-fits-all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited, online, and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up, is it true that 20 out of 32 fourth graders in a class in Texas came out identifying as LGBTQ? I'll share with you that story in just a moment. Also discussing a little bit of the perspective on a case that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson gave a sentencing on. First, are you following the Lenten lessons on the Mass here at Relevant Radio every single day delivered to your inbox from Father Rocky? Is a teaching during Lent on the Mass? And today, the Lenten lesson on the Mass had to do with a part of the Eucharistic prayer, the memento. It's a moment to remember those whom we have been asked to pray for or whom we wish to pray for. And it could be the living as well as the dead. I love this part of the Mass because it's a reminder that when we go to Mass, we get to go to Mass. It's a gift. It's an opportunity. And not only do we get to go to Mass, we get to pray the Mass. We get to offer ourselves and we get to offer prayers for others. And those could be deceased relatives who we're praying will enter the kingdom of heaven. Those could be for friends, family members, or even strangers who we know are going through a difficult time in their life. So this is a special opportunity, and it's a reminder that if we're not listening, if we're not paying attention during Mass, we miss these special moments of prayer. And we were talking about a little bit about suicide earlier. You know, I think of a family member of mine who committed suicide some years ago, and I think of him and I pray for him at every single Mass. And this is a gift of souls for us when tragedy has occurred in our families, when death has happened, that our faith helps to usher us forward as it helps us to trust in God's mercy and God's providence, as well as in God's justice, that we understand his perspective, or we try to, and we do that by total abandonment to him in prayer. And so I hope you'll sign up still for Lenten Lessons on the Mass. Find them at relevantradio.com. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. If you have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149. You can always ask your question on Instagram as well. Follow me at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I'd love to hear from you what topics you're interested in, perspective or a take that you might have on what's happening, especially this LGBTQ crisis that we are facing today. We'll get to that in just a moment. I hope that you'll join me, if you haven't already, in consecrating your life to St. Joseph. St. Joseph, 3 years ago when the book Consecration to St. Joseph by Father Calloway came out, I started working through the consecration with my husband. For him, it was life-changing. It was life-changing for his career, for entrusting his career. And at the time we were pregnant with our first baby, of, you know, orienting ourselves at, and especially him as a father, as a provider. And so each day I'm walking through a theme from that consecration to St. Joseph and his life. And today's theme, and I hope, you know, it's not too late if you want to join the consecration to St. Joseph. You can make it May 1st on the feast day of St. Joseph the Worker, or another day. But today's theme in that book, and we'll include a link in the podcast notes for today's show, is St. Joseph as that image of the Father. And when I say image of the Father, we're talking about our Heavenly Father, that God chose Saint Joseph to be his representative on earth, to be a father to God the Son, Jesus Christ. Now, Saint Peter Julian Aimard, actually, there's a comment that he made that really hit home the reality of the great gift of Saint Joseph as the father of Christ on earth, knowing he's a foster father, he's not the biological father, but how profound this really is in relation to us understanding the Heavenly Father and understanding Saint Joseph. He said, "Our Heavenly Father has had only one saint to represent him on earth. Hence, he bestowed everything he could on that favored saint and equipped him with all that he needed to be his worthy representative." So what St. Peter Julian Aimard is saying is that God the Father chose one saint in all of history to be his representative, to be the earthly father of Jesus Christ, his son. And he bestowed everything on that man, on that human, Saint Joseph. He's a favored saint. He equipped Saint Joseph with everything he would need to be a worthy representative of God the Father, a father to Jesus. And I thought that was so profound, that in understanding just a little bit of how important the saints are, but especially Saint Joseph, as not just models for us in our lives, but as intercessors, that God bestows incredible graces upon his saints, and that those saints now in the heavenly kingdom can pray for us, just like you might ask me to pray for you. Why can't we ask the saints in heaven to pray for us? They're there. They're at the side of God before our Lord Jesus Christ. And so this consecration to St. Joseph, this theme today of understanding St. Joseph as an image of the Father, I thought was so profound. So more wisdom on St. Joseph. If you've made your consecration to St. Joseph and would like to share something that stood out to you, or maybe you're making it for the first time, please comment now on my Instagram story. I put a comment box up. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, I want to talk about a couple stories. First and foremost is the report that came out earlier this week that in the records that were given to the Judiciary Committee that was going to be hearing at the confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and whether or not she would be confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States, the highest court in our land, a very important case was omitted in what the White House gave to the Judiciary Committee. Now, the White House has since come out saying that it was an oversight, they didn't mean to, but it is disheartening and concerning that this particular case was ignored, because if you've paid attention to what's happening with the hearings on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, there's been a really strong point of contention, and that has to do with her reduced sentencing not following the normal sentencing for people who have used and engaged with child pornography. She is known for extreme leniency and even having written academic papers as to why she believes adults who look at and use pornography of children, I'm talking about 5-year-olds, I'm talking about 12-year-olds, she's defended that. And she defends it in part, and we could get very deep into this, but she defends it in part due to the normalcy of pornography today. And you could argue from a perspective of mercy and forgiveness, but I have a problem with that. Why just having to do with kids? It's one thing if we were talking about adult pornography, but we're talking about pornography of children. Now, here's the case that the White House omitted when they gave their briefing to the Judiciary Committee on a plethora of cases of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's sentencing. This case had to do with 6,500 files of children, middle school, and high school children, all children, minors. Think about middle school, elementary school. We're talking about 12-year-olds. We're talking about 5-year-olds. 6,500 files of these kids performing and posing in sexual acts. And Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson took it upon herself engaging in what is known as what we would call activism from the bench. That is activism as a judge. Now, judges' sentencing should not be partial. It should not be swayed. It should be impartial. What she's done on countless occasions is she's actually chosen to engage in activism from her position of authority in reduced sentencing, ignoring, absolutely ignoring the recommendation, especially in this particular case, of, for example, the probation officer who encouraged and recommended one sentencing, and she reduced the sentencing by a couple years. And this case was one of the largest and most outrageous cases that she has heard having to do with child pornography. And here's the deal. This whole conversation isn't just about Ketanji Brown Jackson as potentially our next Supreme Court justice. This is about children. And this is about protecting children. It's about accountability for those who are abusers and users of children. And it's about consequences for offenders. It's also about healing for those offenders, giving them time to think about what they've done and to come back into society apologetic to make up for what they've done. We're not talking about adult pornography in these cases where she's shown leniency. She's engaging in judicial activism, obvious bias of reduced sentencing for child abusers, perhaps not in person, but who are buying and funding the sex trafficking of kids. And why is this all so important? Why are we talking about this? This isn't politics. This is us being protectors of children. This is us saying this isn't okay. This judge is, again, engaging in judicial activism, which is not the role of any judge, and especially not the role of a judge before the Supreme Court of the United States, hearing the most controversial and most important cases that our nation will hear and judging the constitutionality of those cases. That's what should be done. But that's not what we've seen in her record. And so this is one of the major reasons why she is unacceptable as a potential judge and why we need to continue to pay attention to the conversation surrounding the crisis of pornography. If you or someone you know is struggling with looking at pornography, I hope you'll check out the resource of our good friend of trending here, Jim O'Day. He's a regular guest at Integrity Restored. IntegrityRestored.org is an organization helping anyone who might be struggling with pornography addiction or who might be struggling with a spouse or a family member who's looking at pornography and you've experienced betrayal from that. So check out integrityrestored.com. Again, that's integrityrestored.com. Let's find hope, healing, and faith in the midst of a crisis, yes, of a harmful addiction that many people are entering into as young as the ages of 8, 10, 12 years old, male and female alike struggling with pornography addiction. And we have resources and help and hope, but no one's getting this resource unless you speak up and you share it. So maybe post a link to Integrity Restored online. Let someone know, you know, as a resource, especially parents, to have these resources. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray today on Relevant Radio. Happy Friday. Let's talk about the news that came out of Texas this past week. A Texas school teacher is claiming that 20 out of 32 of her fourth graders, no, just so you know, fourth graders are 10-year-olds. She's saying that 20 out of 32 10-year-olds have come out to her as some form of identifying as LGBTQ. This is outrageous, and I in no way believe it. And if they did come out as identifying in any way such as LGBTQ to her, it was coerced on her part and pressured on her part. This is the breaking news. According to an internal school district reviewed message that has circulated in Texas, Blackshear Elementary School hosted a pride parade that they, for elementary kids, we're talking about 5-year-olds, we're talking about 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 7-year-olds, a pride parade for elementary school kids. The pride parade occurred and the principal tried to call it a wellness walk to get away around some of the controversy. Well, this teacher has been fighting for more LGBTQ activity and the pride parade wasn't enough for her. She was upset about it even being called a wellness walk. Well, now she's come out in internal emails as she's complaining about the fact that having a pride parade or calling it by something else isn't enough. She wants more for five-year-olds, for seven-year-olds. It's not enough to her. And she says that part of the reason why she thinks this is so is because, according to her, she claims that 20 out of 32 of the 10-year-olds in her fourth grade class came out as pro-LGBTQ. Or not as pro, but as identifying as queer, as transgender, as gay, or whatever it might be, the 25 plus definitions that people can have. So here's the deal. We are seeing this battle occurring across the nation. Another story came out in Texas that an Austin Independent School District posted a flyer during Pride Week asking five-year-olds, to keep LGBTQ conversations confidential. The school district actually commented, came out defending confidentiality with five-year-olds talking about sex with adults. And they said that this makes students feel more trusted and respected for their privacy. And they expect parents, if they don't want their kids being involved in LGBTQ programs at school, that they can opt out of those activities. But the kids are being told to keep conversations about sex confidential. I'm sorry, I was just in a mom's group last night, and I was so impressed. A couple of the moms, apparently sex was mentioned between a couple of the eight-year-olds on the playground, and they were aware. They knew it happened. They had conversations with each other. They had conversations with their kids. They were able to confront it head on. They knew what was happening in their kids' lives. They gave age-appropriate responses to the questions that the kids had to help them understand the value of their bodies, the importance of protecting their bodies, and the beauty of being made male and female as God intended. That's what this whole story is about. This is what the story is about. The God created us male and female. God had a plan for the human person. He created us intentionally. There's value to being a human person. There's value to our body. There's value to our soul. And what the world is trying to do right now, what the culture is trying to do, the mainstream media or political activist teachers are trying to do with 10-year-olds, they're trying to force an ideology to question who you are, to question the very existence of being made intentionally with purpose, with value, of being loved. They're trying to erase God's imprint on the human person. They're trying to erase the Creator's intention for the human person. There are so many things we could talk about that if we erased the intended purpose of a created thing, what type of damage that could do to society. If we didn't fill our cars up with gas, or if we put the gas into the wrong part of the car. In fact, I went, rode a bunch of jet skis this summer, and some of the men in the family mistakenly thought that they were filling up the gas tank and flooded the engine with gas. Well, guess what? The jet ski stopped working, had to fix it, had to like completely clean this thing out. It really damaged the jet ski. Well, think about that when it comes to the human person. When we try to function as something other than what we are, we won't be happy. We'll see an increase in things such as sexually transmitted diseases, which is, by the way, what happens when you engage in intimate acts with people of the same sex. Your body wasn't created for that. And the increase in STDs and damage and impact psychologically, physically is astronomical, but no one's talking about that. That God has a plan for the human person. He intended us as male and female, and we need to tell the truth. And I do find it telling. Here we are this week. It's April Fool's Day. And I just kind of look at it and I wonder, is everything a joke today? Can we make up lies, tell jokes every day, post it as a breaking headline and people believe it? I don't buy it that 20 out of 32 10-year-olds in an elementary school class in Texas have come out identifying as LGBTQ. Don't believe the lies. Just like on April Fool's Day, we have apprehension about many of the things people say and do to us, that everything could be a prank. Well, perhaps that's the attitude we should have when we read headlines. We're skeptical, we question, we dig down. We think about how God created us as male and female and what the purpose is and how this story fits into the creation of the world and the intention God had for us. And that ultimately we're created to be with Him, and we get it wrong about being a creature. We get it wrong about being able to be with Him, the Creator. Have you ever joined us for a weekly happy hour every Monday on Trending? I hope you'll join me. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Father Nathan Cromley will join me this Monday, and we'll talk about what does the metaverse have to do with our happiness and our future. People are converting, banks are converting to the metaverse. What about us? How far do we go? Do we participate to survive as functioning members of society, or do we ignore it? Join me Monday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.